At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
To the old me, scared and unseen. You're the reason I built this dream. Now I speak so others thrive. Turn my scars into sound. I come alive from the ashes of the breakdown. I don't run, I rise, won't back down. This bound, every word a step, every truth profound. We don't heal in silence, we fight with grace, softness and defiance, lighting up this place. It's a call to every soul who wants to be free. A song for-
When you think of skyrocketing brands like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, it's easy to credit their success to great products, sleek branding, and brilliant marketing. But here's the overlooked secret. The real magic lies in the engine behind the scenes, the business powering their business. For millions of brands, that engine is Shopify, making selling seamless for them and shopping effortless for us. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Aloe Yoga uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/retail to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/retail.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hello, hello. It's Brooke Devard from Naked Beauty. Join me each week for unfiltered discussion about beauty trends, self-care journeys, wellness tips, and the products we absolutely love and cannot get enough of. If you are a skincare obsessive and you spend 20 plus minutes on your skincare routine, this podcast is for you. Or if you're a newbie at the beginning of your skincare journey, you'll love this podcast as well because we go so much deeper than beauty. I talk to incredible and inspiring people from across industries about their relationship with beauty. You'll also hear from skincare experts. We break down lots of myths in the beauty industry. If this sounds like your thing, search for Naked Beauty on your podcast app and listen along. I hope you'll join us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Edna White, your host of Keeping It Real on Purpose. And we are so excited to be here today. I am so excited. And audience, you guys know me. I get excited about everything. But this guest right here is going to give me the fortitude to really embrace a subject I don't like talking about, but I'm going to love talking about it with him. His name is Stephen Graves. He has so much to offer to us today, and he's going to talk about politics, but I want him to introduce himself because there's too much. I might miss. Stephen, how are you today? And welcome to the show.
I'm excellent. Thank you for having me. I feel blessed and honored to be a part of the show during the holiday season, I know. So that's been fantastic. To introduce myself to your guests, obviously, I'm Dr. Stephen Graves. I'm from the Oklahoma State University Department of Political Science and the Center for Africana Studies. I hold a PhD in political science and political science from Howard University in Washington, D.C., a prominent HBCU. So I'm very proud of that. And my mom is, too. So I want to make sure I shout that out.
You better say that.
You know, that's right. I do a lot of, you know, again, main research in Black politics, Black political voting behavior. And political ideologies, American government, and blessed to be here. I'm really thankful and grateful.
I am so glad to hear that you have so much experience in all those areas. I really want to take the first thing that you took apart, that you said first apart.
Okay.
Share with us, being part of Black Africana Studies. Share with us your experience with that.
It's always been a kind of an up and down kind of relationship. Obviously, as a Black person going through, grad school and undergrad, my parents really kind of raised me to be somewhat conscious of Black history and kind of where we are. And so growing up in predominantly white areas in K through 12 and not having access to that, by the time I got to college and really got to kind of study and do what I wanted to, I wanted to study and learn about Black people and where we were from. When I got into, my career in academics, with 2016 and the way the kind of the critical race theory kind of thing kind of took off, and now we're in that DEI kind of thing taking off in some southern states and some Republican-led places, really attacking diversity and equity, or really kind of attacking critical race theory. What do you do with Black studies? What do you do with Africana studies is always kind of in the in the back of our consciousness. Especially in then a predominantly white institution as far as higher academics goes, it's always that what's the value of Black politics? The value of Africana studies? Like what are we teaching Black people about Black people? Why is it important? Is it only for Black students and everything else is? And so there's always a lot of that, and I've had to battle a little bit and a lot with white colleagues, kind of thinking that our scholarship isn't the same, it's not as valued as important enough. Kind of a
Oh,
niche, kind
that's
of an area. And so we're always fighting for that validation amongst our white colleagues,
yeah.
why Africana studies is important, why we should be doing Black studies. And
Absolutely.
in white, again, in white areas and white states, I was at University of Missouri before and now in Oklahoma, when they're public land grants, so like the legislature and the people have a lot to say about where the funding goes. And so you
Yeah,
in
absolutely.
conservative areas and they don't want to fund Black studies, they don't want to fund DEI, there's no money for it. And so we're always trying to do more with less, is always a big part of the thing. And then there's lastly, then there's always this kind of unshared burden on our Black students. So Black students really look for Black studies, Africana studies to kind of be a home for them. They looking for Black faculty, there's they want to have someone to kind of bounce off of that looks like them. And so there's always this little uneven burden of our service too, to kind of Black History Month events and MLK events. When there's something that happens on campus or off campus that concerns Black students, we're always the one to call. So there's always that little uneven burden as far as kind of service goes. But I couldn't imagine doing anything else. And I've just always tried to
That's
work hard and
great.
strive to to make sure that Black studies and Africana studies are important aspects that everyone should learn about, including our white colleagues, and our
That's
white
right.
have just as
That's
much
right.
at stake in learning about Black people as Black people do.
That's right. That's really good. I will say that when you started talking about this, I came from Alabama with my family here. I'm on Long Island, by the way.
Okay.
And I moved into a predominantly white neighborhood, and I think I was the first white black that had braids that was from down south that came. And then there was another young lady that was with me, and her name was Joyce. I never will forget her. She was black African, was different. So we both came, and they were like feeling our hair, and it was just such a culture shock to me because I've, I was a kid, I was seven. I'm
Yeah.
going to school. I'm like, everybody's like, ooh, like I was this new thing. I want to ask you, and I got two questions early too. I do, and I want to ask you. One is there true diversity, equity, and inclusion? Is there true, the way that, let me say, the way that they present it in the business world right now?
No, I think there's a couple of things. One, when we talk about, especially with a recent affirmative action case and it being and it kind of going away, right? So a lot of times when people when originally when people thought of diversity and affirmative action, they originally thought of Black people. Okay, that was at its real an original intent. It was about getting Black people into opportunities that they previously didn't have. Post Brown v. Board, post Civil Rights Movement, that affirmative action and the scare from whites about affirmative action was Black people getting into colleges, Black people getting into jobs. And then when they originally thought about diversity, they originally thought about Blacks and African Americans having opportunities and everything else it is. You know, post Jesse Jackson in the 80s and the kind of rainbow coalition and this kind of need for what we now call multiculturalism and everything else. Diversity is really kind of, diversity is really taking on a different term. So now diversity just means anything that's not white heteronormative. So now, the Asian Americans are now part of what calculates as diversity. They've even expanded it up so much to the where diversity now means diversity of opinions as well. So getting conservatives in there or getting someone who believes in communism in there, like those now qualify as diversity. So where diversity once meant black people, it has now been umbrellaed up so wide to now where it really can kind of mean anything. And so when we see diversity numbers and like, well, how come there's still all black people there, but they call it diverse? Well, they've got minority women in there and they've got other groups in there. So the black population really doesn't see much improvement and everything else this and other groups do, and they call it diversity, even though that the initial scare and the initial kind of push is about, oh, we're getting, you know, black people opportunities. And the same thing went with affirmative action, and studies have shown that the biggest benefactors of affirmative action have been white women. But they, white women have been the benefactors of affirmative action. But they'll make it seem like, oh, this is all about black people getting jobs, and now I've got a black boss and a black manager and everything else in this. But that's not really it kind of at all. And so, you know, trying to, you know, overcome that adversity and that kind of stereotype of when people talk about diversity and equity and affirmative action, they're no longer just talking about black people now. It can virtually mean every LGBTQIA is now diverse. So they bring in a white male who is, you know, part of that community, and that now qualifies as diversity. And so it really has kind of taken on a life of its own.
It started, like you said, like, focusing on us, and then it just branched off. And that brings me to the second question. Now, I always divert back to my childhood. So I remember being taught about Martin Luther King, a few others, three others. It was three others. What's his name?
Frederick Douglass, probably.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And Moses, what can I think?
Marcus Garvey.
Yes. That wasn't even.
That's way too extreme.
That was not brought up. Don't even say that. Yeah. The Underground Railroad.
Of course. Harriet Tubman.
That was the three.
Yeah.
But I never, I was young. So when I felt some type of way when my white teacher was telling me about these three people, and I bring that up to date now, am I okay, or should I be better than that if I'm being taught about us by another race? Am I okay with that? Should I be okay with that? Or how can I embrace it if I'm wrong?
I mean, there is an issue of that. You know, we've had that issue before in some of our introduction classes when they're taught by whites. Some of our black students are like, you know, little unease, like, you know, that openness is being able to kind of say. And of course, like you said, in traditionally through K through 12, we've only been taught slavery, Underground Railroad, MLK, Barack Obama, and that's pretty much is the kind of crux.
Well, that's what you got. I didn't get Barack Obama. I got I didn't even get Marcus Garvey until I was in high school. No, yeah.
Frederick Douglass.
Yeah, slavery. Frederick Douglass. Marcus Garvey was banned.
Yeah. Civil War.
Oh, yeah, it was.
And then move on right into the civil rights movement and MLK. Yeah. And so problem with that is that yes, there are so many more important, prominent people that contributed so much to, you know, black life and African American life and where we are. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, what we've been taught and kind of learned about the people that we are is tainted in many ways.
Oh,
as well.
Absolutely.
Because it's a narrative and a story that they really want to tell. Right. And it's usually one about peace and reconciliation and good, happy blacks who have kind of contributed to the American story. And there's not much attention in there, whatnot. Because the history really of African Americans, especially, you know, politically and in this country is really one of polarizing kind of polar opposites. There's always been this kind of faction that says we can make this work in America, right? We're just going to hold the founding fathers accountable. We're going to stick to this constitution. This thing can work. Okay. But then there's always has been this other branch of the black population who says this is never going to work. They don't like us. They don't want us. They have shown us that they don't want us here and they don't like us. This is not going to work. So when you've even when you've got people like Frederick Douglass, who's you know, trying to hold Lincoln accountable, and he's saying this country owes us. There is Martin Delaney and other people out there going, Black people, we got to do our own thing. This thing is not going to work. They don't like us. Let's build our own institutions and let's kind of just, you know, and kind of do our own thing. And that is controversial, you know, even, you know, further down the road, post-Reconstruction and everything else it is. Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois is saying, hey, let's fight for Black inclusion and being, you know, and be involved in higher education. And there's another branch saying, like Marcus Garvey saying, Black people, do your own thing. It ain't going to work. They don't like us. It's time to build our own thing. And that's what Marcus Garvey and Booker T. Washington were saying. Black people, build your own institutions, separate yourself and build your own economy up and do your own thing. They don't want us here. They don't like us. It's time to take care of self. And we're going that way.
Yes.
You know, even when you get into then, so that's in the, you know, 1910s and 20s, you get to the 50s and 60s, same kind of a thing, right? You've got Martin out there saying, hey, we're going to hold the country accountable. Justice, equality, all those kind of things, right? But then you've got Malcolm X and NOI and my brother's out there saying
a whole polar opposite.
It's not going to work. They don't want us. They don't like us. They have taught us over and over again that they do not want us. They don't see us as equals. Let's do our own thing. And so there's always been that conversation in the Black community as far as what our role in America is. We're either going to, you know, make this thing work with white people and be part of the system, or we're going to come to the realization that it's just not going to happen. They don't want us to be part as equals. They never saw themselves governing alongside us as equals throughout all of the history. They just never fathomed. Even the founding fathers never fathomed the idea. Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Jefferson, they all had the idea that once slavery was over with, we're shipping these Black people back to Africa. Right? That's why they purchased Monrovia and Libya, right? They planned, you know, colonized and said, listen, this is never going to work for a plethora of reasons. Either, and the two reasons were either one, and this is probably a big one, whites were never going to get over the fact that Black people were once slaves and were once beneath them. They were just never going to get over that fact. And the other part about it was Blacks were never going to get over it either. Right, we're never going to get over the thing.
So
the best thing we can do once freedom is gone is get these Black people out of here. We're going to send them to Monrovia, send them to Libya, and get them out of there. But all the Black people said, that's not going to work. And Martin Delaney was one that said, we're not doing that. You're not going to colonize us back to some other place, or else it is. And so they were like, hey, during that time, 90% of Blacks were in southern states. And so they said, hey, just give us these seven states down here in the South, where we're 90% of the population, and we'll leave us alone. They weren't going to give us that, obviously. So then they said, okay, well, how about we just remigrate to the Caribbean, where it's, you know, somewhat in our environment, still got Black people there. We'll migrate there. But white people weren't going to let us go there. They were, you know, again, slave rebellions and fugitive slave law. They're capturing us at the border. They're not going to let us grow real citizens anyway. So that conversation has always kind of been there. And then and Martin Luther King, towards the end of his life, started to come to the same kind of realization. You know, one of the conversations that he had with Harry Belafonte before he was assassinated, of course, by the federal government, we have seen, is that, you know, he articulates to Harry Belafonte. He says, you know, I don't know if I'm sending my people into a burning house. I might be wrong on this one. This integration thing, you know, maybe I'm on the wrong stage on this thing. And last but not least, in that same kind of notion, that March on Washington, his last little address, that was about anti-capitalism. That was about economic equality.
They watered that down to something totally different.
That was a march for economic freedom and justice. It was the march for economic freedom and justice. He's talking about there's a check that white people owed Black people still. This is what the current reparations movement is kind of hitting at. MLK knew that whites were getting an unfair advantage. They owed us for, you know, for our freedoms that we're getting. And that economic push was to get that back, an anti-capitalism movement there. And that was, of course, the end of his life, as he kind of started pushing towards separatism, anti-capitalism, and kind of make it work. Yeah. And that's kind of been, you know, one of the big things, you know, NOI, Malcolm X, Black Panther Party.
Yeah.
They all had this idea that, you know, separatism and separatism is different from segregation. And this is the argument that you're trying to make, right? Segregation is white people telling Blacks where you can and cannot go,
right?
What you can and cannot do. Well, separation is Blacks having the power to say for ourselves where we'll go, where we won't shop, where we won't live. And those are two different things. And so what they're advocating is for separation, and that's totally different from segregation. And these arguments continue to play out through, you know, American history and Black
lives. Absolutely, all over the place, all over the place. Every time you turn around, and I, you know, you're sparking my heart because I'm a baby boomer. That's my time, and I will tell you that I didn't learn any of this. You know, I lived in Alabama. You know, I lived in Alabama, was raised by my great grandparents. My mom was working up here in New York. When I finally came up here, it really was a culture shock. I was like, my great grandfather was one of the first free slaves in Alabama who owned his own property, was taking his whatever he farmed to his own, to the markets. So he was doing a lot of that. I saw all of that. Like that, maybe that's why I got the entrepreneurial spirit, but I saw all of that. And then when I got here, I was like, I was totally confused. I didn't know how to act. And I always say to everybody, so glad I was born where I was born and saw what I saw, because if I saw this, I probably wouldn't be alive right now, because my mouth would have got me a whole lot of trouble. Right?
Yeah.
But what you're sharing right now is so exciting to me, you know, to hear what you know. And I want to, you know, I was feeling this stuff. Every time I have a guest on, audience guys, you know, I always say it's for me. But this is really for me, because I feel this way, what you're saying, and I don't know how to put it in words, and I just go with my feeling, you know, I go with it. So I wanted to say this to you and ask you this question. So where we are, the town always kind of puts on these, you know, gets us all together, right? And pulls every leader from the communities, pulls us together, and they do this like a Kwanzaa or, you know, in February do like a MLK walk. The last time I went to one was 1990 something, and I had bought my Sunday school children, about 30 kids there, and I felt some type of way, and maybe you can help me. And I was walking them in, and I remember seeing like they had like all the white dignitaries, the officials, the politicians sitting up front that gave us this money to give us, and I'm saying this facetiously, that wasn't really true, watermelon chicken. And so I hear them. And I'm sitting on the side, I hear them saying, look how beautiful they look. And it disturbed me. I was like, are we on like a parade or something? And when I heard them kept talking like that, it disturbed me. So I kind of got up and I was like, I grabbed the kids, just everybody hold hands. I had 30 kids. We walk out. So they're like, where are you going? I was like, I won't parade around for anybody. Like, And I never went back. To this day, they ask me, I don't go back.
When you think of skyrocketing brands like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, it's easy to credit their success to great products, sleek branding, and brilliant marketing. But here's the overlooked secret. The real magic lies in the engine behind the scenes, the business powering their business. For millions of brands, that engine is Shopify, making selling seamless for them and shopping effortless for us. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Aloe Yoga uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/retail to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/retail.
I feel that if you're going to do that, give the money to us. Let us as a community decide what we're going to do together. Absolutely. Instead of parading at your front, you know, in front of you at your town hall, mm-hmm. or where you want us to be, and you guys are sitting like you're at a concert. Right. How do you feel about those types of, I guess things that they do, whatever that is?
But no, I think you're absolutely right. And that happens so very often. A couple of things. I would really kind of say two things. One is the kind of pageantry about what you're talking about when they invite Black communities into these places to give some kind of performance or discuss Kwanzaa and everything else like that. It's really about pageantry, but it's also about absolving them from having to actually do anything real tangible to change the material condition.
Thank you.
It's like,
thank you.
We will give, well, we do this in place of doing what you actually, you know, need and what you actually, right. you know, to prove your life. I think I hearken this back to the Juneteenth thing a couple of years ago when they decided to declare that a national holiday. Black people never asked for Juneteenth to be a national holiday. That election
we never
came out.
Did.
We talked
never.
About we talked about police brutality reform. We talked about criminal justice reform. We talked about voting rights. We talked about reparations. We talked about student loan forgiveness. Those are five things that Black people were talking about during that whole time. And now nobody said anything about Juneteenth. They didn't address any of those issues, but then they turn around and give us Juneteenth and they say, see,
right.
we gave you something.
Gave you something.
Right? And they yes. want us to be celebratory and be grateful and thankful for having that. It right. ain't even, but the holiday, everyone gets the holiday off. So it's not even just celebrating Black people. Everyone's getting that day off. So it's
Thank
not
you.
Even, so it's not even benefiting Thank Black people directly and exclusively. No. So that's part no. of it is they want to absolve themselves from actually having to actually do anything. And it's really just right. about kind of the pageantry of it and just celebratory and being able to kind of gawk and make Black people feel like they've actually given them something non-material right. because they don't want yeah. to actually address and look at real
oh,
material.
I love this. Issues. I love this. I love it. I love it. I love it. So I will tell you that that's how I feel. And I haven't taken all the education that you learned, but I felt it. And I was like, no, I never go back. Even when they asked me now as an adult, I was like, no, I'm not being involved. I cannot parade in front of them dressed up. I can't do it. I just, why? You know, give us the money for our communities. Give us that money. Let us do what we want to do. And then I don't see Kanara. If we are celebrating Kwanzaa, I don't see Kanara. I don't see us doing things on the day that we're supposed to be doing it on. We do right. it on the day that you want us to do it on. So Absolutely. You can, like you said, be absolved from your guilt or whatever it is.
Also and simultaneously feeling good. And this is another aspect about it, is this, you know, the white savior complex too as well.
Uh-huh. And yes. Like,
you know,
I say that. Know, I didn't even know it was
what's
a thing.
Better for you guys than you do. We know what's better for you guys than you do, Roasted is. And this is part of the thing that Black people have been advocating for, is mean like you're saying. Who knows about Black issues and how to better improve Black material life than we do? So we can exactly. solve our own problems. This is part of the exactly. conversation before about this ain't going to work. Exactly. We can solve our own problems our own way, you know, with our own leadership and our own character, yep. values, and experience and culture. But instead, what we find, of course, is like you've noticed, is white people want to not only cut the check, but they want to be in leadership roles too, and they want to have yeah. some say and be able to dictate rather than mm-hmm. just letting Black people with the resources solve our own problems in our own kind of a way. Instead, they right. want to have some say and they want to donate money right. and feel like that then gives them the ability to say, we're right. not only helping, but yeah. use our ideas into as well.
Right. Yeah. And I always say that too. Do you see what they're doing to us? Like, you know, we're arguing with each other about being on their board.
Right.
When we have the ability to be on our own board and bring that to our own community, why would you want to be on their board? It doesn't, you're not getting paid. You can do the same exact thing in your own community, come together and do it for your community. Why would you want to? You know,
they want to donate money and be on our boards, or they want to donate $1,000 and be like, but we want a seat on the board. We want to be a voter.
No, they don't even know here. They don't want to do that. No, I'm telling you, Stephen, they don't want to do that here. They want to induct themselves and say that they're like some kind of ambassador or something in our chambers and things like that, but don't want to pay. They don't want to pay.
Of course.
You know, okay. like that. They want to be like, you know, that kind of thing. So no, I think I'm through with that. I think I'm really through that.
Absolutely.
We had in the past, and I just recently actually, where they started to divide the Black line, because one area of our town has like a district, I think District 6 maybe, has the majority of Black people. So they started to chop us up, you know, chop us all up and give us to this part and give us to, you know. Redistricting, they started to redistrict our voting areas, which Absolutely. brings me to what I really want to talk about is Black political behaviors. And I know that you know all about this. I was furious with people that didn't show up. And I'm always furious with people that don't show up. I screw with my kids. My kids are old. And I'm like, you're not voting? Well, it doesn't make a difference anyway. Yes, it does. It does. I'm telling you, it does. Tell us about these behaviors. Please, just Just please.
Well, the thing I would say is that both are right. And, you know, participating in local elections, absolutely. Especially where, you know, city council, superintendents, police, you know, police forces and sergeants, those local offices that are part of local elections, absolutely. Those votes definitely are important, definitely matter. And same with policy legislations and referendums that come up, that they come up in local elections, absolutely. Now, national elections, it gets a little bit different. It gets a little bit dicey, especially when you're talking about the electoral college and swing states. As you see, every presidential election, they're really only following those nine states in the middle: Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin. You know, there's these swing states in the middle, and elections.
What are you telling me? Say this way. Hold on.
The election really comes down to those.
If I could rewind, I would say it again.
The national elections, presidential elections, really only come down to a handful, about seven or eight states, and the rest of the states don't really matter. The swing states in the middle, where you see most presidential candidates spend the majority of their money, places like Ohio, Wisconsin, Indiana, Michigan, occasionally Missouri, North Carolina, Virginia. Those are kind of swing states that can kind of go either way. But for 80% of these states, most of them are kind of predetermined, right? Like those main southern states that voted red for the last 20 years, they're going to continue to vote red. You see places like California and Washington State and Oregon and New York, they mostly vote blue. So you're really kind of like carving up, you know, these big states kind of in the middle. And those are usually where these elections, national elections, really kind of get determined. And so that's why you see, advocating and how those black votes are kind of getting carved up in those places, because those are really where national elections really come down
to.
You don't see a lot of presidential candidates go to all 50 states, especially because some of those states have already predetermined, right? Tennessee is voting Republic. Alabama is voting Republican, right? And so you don't really kind of see black people then advocating for Democratic candidates in those states trying to swing votes. Until Bill Clinton won Arkansas back in the 90s, that had been red for decades. And ain't no Democrat run Arkansas since. But he happened to be the former governor of there, so he was able to pull Arkansas. But that's traditionally a red state too, as well. So these national elections really kind of get in there. But on the other hand, I would also then say that, you know, to the notion about, you know, whether you vote or not, can you still kind of complain? And I always advocate, absolutely. I mean, because whether you vote or not, you're still a tax-paying citizen. They're taking our money, and they're using it. It's like going to a restaurant. It's like going to a restaurant. I don't necessarily get to choose what's on the menu, but if my food comes out and I don't like it, I still get to complain because I'm paying. And so, right?
Absolutely.
So elections are kind of the same way. And another thing about it too, that I was always advocate is, yes, they're important, but, you know, improvement of Black life and our material conditions is on a daily basis. You know, you just can't show up every Super Tuesday in every election and think that the civic duty and improving our lives stops and ends there. Mm-hmm. Now, the majority of, you know, improving Black life really starts at home and starts locally. Loving up on your family. Do you attend PTA meetings? Do you go to student council meetings? The rest is when you're, you know, for your children and what's your opinion there? That's really kind of at the heart of where, you know, improvement kind of, you know, comes. But we kind of get into this idea that I'm showing up on Tuesday and vote and now my job is done and let's see what happens with Black life. But there's just so much more to that. So again, I would hearken for, you know, that you're both kind of right, that these local elections are important and everything else, but we can't get so bogged down into thinking that, you know, that's the main way to change our lives, when there are, you know, things that happen, you know, daily, you know, in our family life and our communities that are much more important that contribute down the line, for real.
Yeah, got you. I love what you said about you spending some time, if you have children, in the PTA.
Yes.
Because I was an advocate for that. When I walked down the hall, they knew exactly who I was. Mm-hmm. I was not playing. I was not playing. What am I coming here for? You know, and I advocate that way, even for my, you know, my children. When I had my children, I was going into a district that was all white. Mm-hmm. That did not, like, my kids were like, were the blacks, you know, a handful of blacks, maybe five or six blacks, you know, and I stayed in the school. You're not going to do just anything you want with my children. No, you're not. You're not going to just, I wanted to review things. And it's so important these days and ages for our young people that are having children or have children that are school age to be involved in the school. Don't just let the school raise them.
Absolutely.
One thing I hate is that when you don't take your children to physicals, but you let the school give them a physical. I hate that.
Don't do it.
I don't know why. I'm like, don't do that. That they could do anything to No, that's not allowed.
Yeah.
You have, when you start handing over your child like that, that mm-hmm. tells me now you're handing them over indefinitely, no matter what they do, you're handing them over. So I like what you said about that.
An adult should always be in the room during those physical, like during physical exams. So if they're trying to get them away at school and you're not able to make it, you opt out of the, then you can just opt out, or unless you're able to attend, but you never let them test or do any kind of medical, you know, Black people know obviously throughout our history, you never let them experiment or do any kind of medical exams on children without there being an adult around to ask questions and to, and to oversee.
Absolutely. I totally 100% agree. When they asked me about that when my kids are small, I was like, all I thought about is remember seeing movies of the military men going in and just being examined any kind of way. And I was like, oh no, not my children.
Yeah, the Tuskegee.
I thought about that. I was like, oh no, like you're taking their DNA and doing whatever you want with it. Oh no.
Yes, Henrietta Lacks. Absolutely. Henrietta Lacks. And they're pulling her DNA out of there and using it for polio. No compensation, no compensation, no heads up, no nothing. Just experimenting on Black people, whilst it is unknowingly. And so, you know, again, when COVID came out, they're wondering why all these Black people are skeptical of COVID. Well, we've seen what you've done to Black people before.
Absolutely.
And so we're, you know, shooting us up with what? You know, there's always going to be that skepticism of African-Americans and the medical system because of that history of the Tuskegee experiment and Henrietta Lacks and the kind of, and the HALUG gene.
And
when you think of skyrocketing brands like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, it's easy to credit their success to great products, sleek branding, and brilliant marketing. But here's the overlooked secret. The real magic lies in the engine behind the scenes, the business powering their business. For millions of brands, that engine is Shopify, making selling seamless for them and shopping effortless for us. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Aloe Yoga uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/retail to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/retail.
I was working for an agency and they always wanted me to help them dispel this, that myth that there's nothing to be afraid of. And I always said no. And I don't know why. I guess I'm just somebody that kicks against stuff like that. But I was like, no, I think everything that we're feeling, because I don't say they, I say we, because we are feeling it, is valid.
Absolutely.
We're feeling that because it's valid. You know, and I would go back and say, well, that's not now. I said, how do we know that?
Here's the thing. And it's still happening now. And we've seen this more recently in the research about Black maternal care. And you've seen that news out lately, especially when Serena Williams came out after she gave birth to her first. And she came out and said, I almost died in there. And and they don't know how to treat Black pain, right? They don't need it tougher. They can handle it better and everything else it is. So when someone is rich and is famous and prominent, Serena Williams comes out and says, Black maternal care is a disaster. They don't understand Black women's bodies. I almost died in there. Then it finally comes out and say, oh my goodness, they are, you know, Black maternal care is at an extremely dangerous rate and twice the
blunt
of everyone else. Like they don't understand and aren't treating Black women when they come into the doctor and say, hey, this doesn't feel right, or this is more painful. Like, oh, you know, you're going to be okay. Black people can stand a little bit more pain. You don't need as much. Like, no, so they're still doing it to this day as far as how, you know, Black people are being, you know, responded to and treated in medical facilities.
Absolutely. I went to the doctors and was concerning my cholesterol. And the doctor said to me, he asked me this question. He said, are you on any medication? I said, no. He said, no medication? This is how he did to me. He said, like, no medication? I said, no. He said, you're almost 60. No medication? I said, no. I do everything I'm supposed to. So they did the blood work. And as it came back, he says, well, you have problems breathing, you know. I said, yeah, because I had a car accident and had collapsed lungs. And I explained that. I said, if you would have read my record, you would have known that, you know. So, and then he says to me, well, your cholesterol is two notches from whatever number, I forget the number, that we have to give you medication. I said, well, what, you know, I said, what? I said, according to my history, or according to like, what is it according to? So yeah. He says, well, it's according to what, I forgot what they said, the thing that they do, the according to our whatever they do, and they did all these people, 100 people or whatever, and this is what they come up with. I said, well, how many were Black and how many were Caribbean, how many were, you know, and I started to break it down. He's like, yeah. No, that's besides the point. I said, no, it's not. I said, because you're talking to Edna. You know, I was like, you're talking to Edna. So Edna needs to know by her lineage, how many of these people that were surveyed, that's what they said, survey, how many of this survey that were like me? Mm-hmm. And so he says, well, it'll save you a heart attack in 10 years. I said, 10 years? I said, 10 years? I said, so what is it doing to my body in general? Oh, he said, yeah, by the way, you have to get your liver tested every 6 months. I said, what? I said, no. I said, no, that won't happen. And they were arguing with me. And then they would send another doctor. You got to go to this doctor now since you're refusing this. I said, God, you know. And finally, the last doctor I got to, he says to me, you gotta take, I'm going to give you another pill. I know the other ones didn't work because you were responding negatively. Literally, it tightened my body so bad, my son had to come get me out of the bed. And I was like, there's no way I'm taking this medicine. There is no way. I had muscle spasms everywhere. Yeah. I was like, I don't care. Second, third, fourth, fifth pill, I'm not taking it. So he's like, you got to take this. I said, no. What you should do for me is send me to the less invasive, maybe genetic testing, maybe a nutritionist, but you haven't suggested anything. You went straight to the pill.
Yep.
And I said, if I'm having an allergic reaction to this, I'm going to have an allergic reaction to the third pill. I'm not taking any of it. Mm-hmm. So they're very... I have to advocate for yourself, but what I'm saying to you is the doctor was so mad at me.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how mad at me he was. I said, he's like, oh, just have a good day. I said, well, you know what? When you walk out this door, plan not to be my doctor anymore. Don't. I said, you're not, for you to be mad at me because I'm advocating for myself is beyond me. I don't get it. Mm-hmm. And I said, so when you walk out the door, you're not my doctor any longer. Find me somebody else.
That's right.
So advocating for yourself, it's happening now. It's happening so much now. I can't even understand it.
Mm-hmm. That and they a lot of more holistic people are finding out more holistic, natural ways that they can to get healthy instead of, like you said, have you thought about a nutritionist? A lot of the time, this stuff is in our diet and things that we're consuming and putting into our bodies that we're not knowing about.
Right.
And believe you me, if you've made it this long without being on prescriptions and being in pharmacies, you'll be all right at this day and age. And there's other ways of going about it. And there's no good intention on getting on those things now.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, I felt really good about like advocating for myself. And my friend said, keep going because they're going to send reinforcements. I was like, are you kidding me?
Get on some kind of prescription. They want you in the database. They want you somewhere in that database for taking something. They want to get you on something.
Yeah. I said, are you kidding me? Are you just kidding? And so now I'm at the gynecologist. I'm telling her what happened to me. She goes, well, you know, we're finding that blood, cholesterol has to do with heredity. And it's not necessarily high or low. I said, yeah, because one of my doctors who is Greek, his blood pressure, his cholesterol is 3-something. And his doctor says he's fine.
Right.
But why is it I'm not fine? I don't get it. I don't get it. It's 2 times mine. I don't get it.
Yeah.
And so she said, I think, and I'm at a gynecologist now. And I will say that I'm at a gynecologist. She's saying it. I don't really advise people to not do anything. But if you feel like you shouldn't take it, don't take it.
Amen.
That's what she said to me. She's on the other end of my mouth. Okay.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's empowering.
It's empowering. I was like, okay, then I'm doing the right thing. Because I'm telling her, because she's asking anything different. And so I'm telling her, she goes, well, we're finding now it's heredity. It's not really dangerous as we see it. And she's explained to me, because I'm not telling you not to, but advocate for yourself the best way, you know? And that made me feel like really good. I was like, okay, so this is it. All we're saying, audience, is advocate for yourself, guys. Absolutely. You know, do that for yourself. Fight for yourself. You know, fight for your children.
Do your own research. Look into things yourself. Always look into things, you know, for yourself, instead of always just taking what you're told at face value.
Absolutely. So how can our audience get to more of you? Because I'm gonna be bugging you. I got your email now. You Absolutely. Are on blast with me.
You how reach can out to me anytime. To Absolutely. But again, I can be found at my own website, www.graveology.com. I'm on Twitter and Facebook as Dr. Stephen Graves, PhD. So I can be found out there. And I always enjoy having these conversations. So you reach out to me anytime about any topic. But you can find me on those avenues and on those media platforms.
Great. That's terrific. Well, I'm falling in love with you already. Like, you are like giving me information I've never known. And I know that if I were to talk to you any longer, I'd probably be too stuffed to move. Because you have so much information. Audience, you have to get in touch with Stephen Graves. You really do, because I think he has a wealth of information, and I'm going to stay in touch. So Absolutely. Is there anything you can give our audience, last words, what you can give them to you know, on any subject that we talked about, because we talked about a lot?
I know the end of the year is coming up. It's a big election year in 2024. I would just advise your audience, especially, be careful out there in this next year coming up. It's a big election. These supporters are going to be on big edge, and they're going to be very bold this year. They see this election as the end all be all for that side, for that Trump side, and for those anger sides. So be on our best lookout, support one another, love one another, hang in there tough. It's going to be a very, very dicey year. Be careful of the rhetoric. Be careful of the provocation on the other side. They're taking this one very seriously. So be careful out there and be mindful and support one another and love one another for sure, because we're going to need it between now and November.
Absolutely. I want to thank you for being here, Stephen. You have been a wealth of knowledge and total excitement. I love it. I love when when a person could share something that usually is boring, exciting. Mm-hmm. And I know that you've done that today for me and my audience. And we're going to have you back, and we're going to have you in other platforms that you can share this wealth of knowledge to our communities. Thanks again. And this is Edna White, your host, saying goodbye for now. And my guest, Stephen Graves, saying we'll see you next time.
You bet.
When you think of skyrocketing brands like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, it's easy to credit their success to great products, sleek branding, and brilliant marketing. But here's the overlooked secret. The real magic lies in the engine behind the scenes, the business powering their business. For millions of brands, that engine is Shopify, making selling seamless for them and shopping effortless for us. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Aloe Yoga uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/retail to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/retail.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Eden Cher.
And I'm Brock Charlelli.
We played best friends on The Middle.
And became best friends in real life.
We're here to rewatch The Middle with all of you.
Each week, we'll recap an episode with behind-the-scenes stories, guest interviews, and what we think now, many years later.
There's a lot to dive into, so let's get to middling.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
We'll be right back. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.